you've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, a very busy time period in the NHL.
Are you ready to go, Drew?
I am ready and raring to go. That's how ready I am. I'm not only just ready, but I'm raring to go as well.
Like a rare steak.
I don't like my steak rare. I'm more of a medium to medium well guy. How about you?
I always go medium rare.
Medium rare, really? Yeah. You like them nice and bloody, do you?
Yeah.
How about you, Dave? Are you much of a steak guy there, Dave?
No, not tremendous.
Not a lot. You don't strike me as a guy who eats a lot of red meat.
I don't.
I know. Slim down, Dave, doesn't eat a lot of red meat. Previous Dave, when you had a few extra LBs on you there.
Yeah, Dave is looking very svelte these days, you know, going to the gym 5 days a week, training, running.
I remember the days when Dave would go, you know, every night to dinner would be, you know, one of those little personal pizzas. That was the Dave Manuka I liked better. Made me feel better about myself.
Most people like that guy better.
Yeah, it's true.
Including me.
Exactly. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. The man on my far left, the man we're giving some ribs to, that's Dave Manuk. Not literally, because, you know, he doesn't eat ribs. We just talked about that. Man in the middle, that's Ezra Ginsberg. A busy Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The NHL is in a very busy time period, as you well know. Let's go through quickly, guys, some of the milestone days as we approach the upcoming NHL expansion draft. Today at 2 p.m., that is when the roster freeze takes effect for every team but the Vegas Golden Knights. So any teams that want to put a player on waivers or want to make a trade, they must do so by 2 p.m. this afternoon. 5 p.m. this afternoon. I think it's either 5 p.m. I think it's actually, pardon me, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern. That is when the teams, the 31 NHL teams or the 30 other NHL teams, have to submit their protected list for the upcoming NHL expansion draft. Tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Winnipeg time, those expansion draft protection lists and vice versa, the unprotected lists, they will be made available. So the public will know tomorrow morning who on the Winnipeg Jets roster is left protected or left unprotected. Do they go with the 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and 1 goaltender format? Do they go with an 8 skater and 1 goaltender format? And then Wednesday at during the NHL Awards is when Las Vegas is going to formally announce.
8 p.m.
Pardon me?
8
p.m.
Eastern.
8 p.m. Eastern. That's when the awards are. That's when Las Vegas is going to formally announce who they select to make up the roster of the expansion Vegas Golden Knights.
And Drew, you mentioned that today at 3 o'clock Eastern, 2 o'clock Central time, there's going to be a trade freeze. We already saw earlier this week Jonathan Drouin traded to the Montreal Canadiens for Mikhail Sergachev, and then some draft picks were also involved. So basically, while we're on air here, there could be some breaking trades. And, you know, when you talk about some of the implications for the expansion draft, I wouldn't be surprised if we do see a trade or two here this morning and early afternoon. And as you mentioned, then we're going to find out tomorrow, finally, who the Winnipeg Jets are going to protect. I don't think, guys, that we're going to have that many surprises. I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, the big question before the expansion draft was, Toby Enstrom going to waive his no-move clause, and were the Jets, as you mentioned, Drew, going to go with the 7-3-1 option or the 4 forwards and 4 defensemen option? Now, if the Jets do go with the 7-3-1 option, that obviously means that the Jets either were able to convince Toby Enstrom to waive his no-move clause, or they're going to expose one of the defensemen that doesn't have a no-move clause, so that's Jacob Trouba or Tyler Myers, and I just don't see that happening. So if they do go with 4-4, then, you know, obviously they're going to lose a better forward, most likely, but we are going to finally know tomorrow.
Well, and the thing is, it's not obvious because in the sense that they could have made a trade. that we don't know about yet.
Right? That's true.
So if it's possible, I mean, there's a lot of Pierre LeBrun was reporting that a lot of first round picks in Vegas back pocket already because there's trades been made for guys to steer away from certain players. So it's obviously possible that, you know, they go, you know, 7-3-1 or they go 4-4. Like depending, like obviously depending on how they've done it, but it's possible that Kevin Cheveldayoff has made a trade to protect a forward like a Matthew Perreault that he may have to leave exposed, or an Adam Lowry, and say, look, you know, please take this, you know, first round pick or second round pick or whatever it is, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And then eventually, you know, so you'll leave this guy alone and you'll take, you know, Marco Dano or you'll take someone else.
Throughout the course of the show today, we're actually going to go division by division, team by team, as only we do here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And we're going to look at the different scenarios that a lot of the NHL teams are experiencing and facing and some of their dilemmas and decisions as it pertains to the NHL expansion draft. We also are going to cover the NHL draft top to bottom as well. Craig Button's going to join us at the bottom of this hour, and Grant McCagg, who covers the OHL, runs a scouting service called recruits.ca. He's going to join us to talk about the NHL draft and the draft eligible prospects coming out of the Ontario Hockey League. It's sort of lost in the shuffle a little bit as we go through the machinations of the NHL expansion draft that we're only 6 days away. Next week at this time, the first round will have been completed because the NHL draft is next Friday. You guys, as will be on air next Friday with Hustler with the entirety of first round coverage, and of course second rounds 2 through 7 Saturday morning here. It's sort of a joint production of Illegal Curve and of, you know, the Afternoon Drive with Hustler. It will be in Chicago bringing you the latest on the NHL draft all next week as well.
Yeah, and Drew, we should also mention today, Dave's point, if Vegas has made some deals, we won't know about them until Wednesday, right?
That's so, right. That's the NHL has requested of the general managers in throughout the league and of Vegas to not leak any trades, not leak any announcements prior to Wednesday. Now, whether or not that's going to hold, I am suspicious. I don't think it will. I think you'll know which teams have done what to some degree, but the specifics won't be known until the big reveal Wednesday night at the NHL Awards / expansion draft in Vegas.
And if the Vegas Golden Knights have acquired a couple of first-round picks, I think that makes it fascinating to see if they package those first-round picks and try to move up, because they have the sixth overall pick, right? So we know that the Dallas Stars have said that they would move the third overall pick, right? So if the Vegas Golden Knights have three first-rounders, maybe they, you know, call, maybe George McPhee calls Lindy Ruff and tries to move up from the sixth overall spot, right? So Vegas holds all the cards right now.
Yeah, they certainly do hold a lot of cards as we enter into what is going to be a bit of a week of flux right now. Want to make note of one more thing. The roster freeze that takes effect at 2 o'clock, so the expansion draft, of course, you know, is Wednesday, but Vegas has a window of opportunity where they can negotiate with any pending UFAs and or pending RFAs between, I think it would take effect tomorrow morning, all the way through sort of Wednesday. Vegas can negotiate ahead of time with any players of that ilk. And if they end up signing one of those guys, that accounts as their expansion draft choice. So if there's a RFA on your roster that you have left unprotected and they are eligible to be picked in the expansion draft, i.e. a guy like on the Winnipeg Jets, a guy like Scott Kosmachuk, if Vegas wanted to negotiate with Scott Kosmachuk between now and Wednesday, they could sign him, and that would count as their pick from the Winnipeg Jets roster.
And the moratorium ends on Thursday at 8 o'clock.
Right, exactly. That's when everything reopens and it's free-for-all as everybody makes the trip, leaves Vegas Thursday morning and heads to Chicago, because it's a real whirlwind of a week this week in the NHL. Let's talk about the Jets news of the week, and there's not much as things continue to be more or less quiet for the Jets. The expectation, you know, for some people, the hope is that's going to change after the expansion draft.
It's not going to be quiet for long, Drew.
Well, that's the hope. That's what people hope, is that they're going to start seeing the Jets make some noise, maybe find that backup goaltender or that second goaltender, whether or not it's a backup, you know, fill some holes starting, you know, in Chicago and then with the NA and then with free agency right after. But the news of this week is they sign Marco Dano to a 1 year, $850,000 contract. It's a one-way deal. The expectation is that if the Jets do go with a 7-3-1 format, meaning if they were able to get Toby Enstrom to waive his no-move clause, or if they were able to, or if they weren't and then they decide to take a risk and expose a guy like Tyler Myers, I don't think that's likely, but if they were to do that, Marco Dano is, I think, the leader in the clubhouse of the guy most likely to be picked by the Vegas Golden Knights off the Jets roster in the expansion draft.
Right, and as you said, Drew, if the Jets do go with the 7-3-1 option, the Vegas Golden Knights aren't going to have that many great forwards to choose from, right? So when you're talking about Marco Dano, I've changed my tune a little bit. When I had the article up on the site, illegalcurve.com, roughly 4 months ago, 5 months ago, I had the Jets protecting Marco Dano under option one, but I do think that the Jets will protect Andrew Kopp over Marco Dano. And I think because he signed the one-year contract, you have to think that, you know, that's a good chance, right? Mm-hmm. And Andrew Kopp is a serviceable forward. When you're talking about Marco Dano and Andrew Kopp, you're talking about third, fourth line guys, right? So when you're talking about that 7-3-1 option, that means that Sean Mathias is going to be exposed and Marco Dano is going to be exposed. Mm-hmm. And then the Jets don't end up losing a defenseman because they got Toby Enstrom to waive his no-move clause. So, you know, maybe, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights take a depth defenseman, but, you know, you're not going to lose.
They could take Toby Enstrom.
Sure.
I mean, the you know, when...
And the Jets could also expose Enstrom and they don't take him.
That's true. I mean, and that's sort of the, you know, do with if Toby Enstrom waived his no-move clause. And again, we don't know that. We won't know that till tomorrow morning. But if Toby Enstrom waived his no-move clause, Dave, do you think that he becomes a target for the Vegas Golden Knights more so than a guy like Marco Dano? I mean, he's got the big ticket, $5.75 million, but it's only 1 year, and Vegas does have to get to the salary floor at a minimum when they, you know, fill out their roster after the expansion draft.
Right, they have to have like at least 60% of the, to the draft, to the cap.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, you're right. There is a desirability potentially to select a player like Tobias Enstrom because he's serviceable, but... You know, do you want to be paying that much money for a guy who a lot of us see now as, you know, a second, third pairing left side defenseman? So, you know, while yes, you do have to get to that level, you know, are you willing to pay that kind of money, even if it is only for a year, for a player of, you know, he's, you know, a depreciating asset at this point in his career? So that's a lot of money still for a player who may only be playing your second or third pairing defensive minutes.
But I think it's attractive, Dave, because he's only got 1 year left on his deal,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
And you know that the Vegas Golden Knights are going to take some bad contracts, right? We've heard that maybe David Clarkson's contract, you know, goes to the Vegas Golden Knights because he's obviously not playing in the NHL anymore.
As part of a trade that
right.
would artificially get them close to the floor because insurance is paying the majority of that contract. That's how that situation works out.
And it goes back to what you said earlier, Dave. Maybe the Jets, you know, trade a draft pick to Vegas in order to not select Toby Enstrom, right? So we don't know what's going to happen because it all depends on if Toby Enstrom has waived his no-move clause. The Jets haven't told us, so it's all speculation at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you're talking about players that the Jets can afford to lose, in my opinion. So if you're talking about Marco Dano, you're talking about Sean Mathias, good players, but the Jets can afford to lose them, in my opinion. Same thing goes for Toby Enstrom. I mean, let's be honest. Is Toby Enstrom a candidate to be re-signed by the Jets to another deal? I don't think so.
Although I will say this. Imagine what the Jets look like on the left side without Tobias Enstrom next year.
Well, this year. I mean,
I mean this upcoming season.
Well, they played half the year without him anyways.
And it wasn't
maybe not half the year.
And it wasn't a great year. So, I mean, the left side is definitely the Jets' weakness. And they, I don't know. I still think that for all, like, he's lost his offensive ability for the most part, but he's still a serviceable left side defenseman, I think.
Well, I think your point, though, Dave, is well taken that if he's no longer on the roster, I mean, we, you know, coming into the offseason, we said, what's one of the priorities the Jets need to do? And that's address the left side of the defense. And that was with the assumption that Toby Enstrom would still be a member of the left side defenseman. They needed an upgrade there. And now if you're taking him off there, you need to upgrade two left side defensive right. spots, which certainly isn't an easy ask in this day and age in the NHL. So I think that's a conundrum the Jets are facing, and it's sort of a risk-reward. I think they want Toby Enstrom to waive his no-move clause. I think it's fairly clear that they probably want that. But I think that they would also rather the Golden Knights take Marco Dano than Toby Enstrom. I think they seem to be more comfortable losing Marco Dano, a guy who, for whatever reason, was never really able to consistently crack Paul Maurice's lineup last year. It seems like the team is... not enamored with Mark O'Donnell, let's say.
Sure, and you know, in theory, because if the Jets lose Toby Enstrom, they would have that extra cap room to sign a left-shot defenseman, right?
That wants to come here.
Yeah, so Toby Enstrom makes $5.75 million a year.
Sure.
So now if Vegas takes that contract, you have all of that money now to bring in a top-four left-side defenseman.
Again, you have to find that guy who wants to spend his time in Winnipeg. That's the sort of caveat to the whole thing. But
well, and that's Chevy's job, right?
It definitely is his job, and then we'll see how easy it is to rectify that problem, I guess, as the summer unfolds and everything else. And as we approach free agency on Canada Day, so 2 weeks from today, we will, of course, be with you live here on TSN 1290, full free agency frenzy coverage with us anchoring that show on Canada Day for about, I think, 4 hours of coverage from starting at 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. with all the latest signings in the NHL.
I think what is going to happen is Toby Enstrom's no-move clause is waived and the Vegas Golden Knights select a forward, probably Mark O'Donnell.
You think it is still going to be, which yep. I think might be the quote-unquote best-case scenario for the Winnipeg Jets. Yep. When we come back, we discuss the blockbuster trade of the week. That is Jonathan Drouin. He's heading to the Montreal Canadiens. Mikhail Sergachev going to the Tampa Bay Lightning. We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
To get a young player in this caliber, it's something that as an organization we could not pass by. My job is the same every day. When I wake up, I try to make this team better, and for the next 2 weeks, especially with the crunch win, I'll try that, and anything's possible. Like I always say, expect the unexpected.
Second straight summer, the Montreal Canadiens have stolen the highlights, at least for a period of time. That's General Manager Marc Bergevin discussing the acquisition of Jonathan Drouin from the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for defenseman prospect Mikhail Sergachev. There are draft picks involved in the trade as well. The Montreal Canadiens will give up a second round pick to the Tampa Bay Lightning, and the Lightning will give the Canadiens a sixth round pick, but that's only conditional. If Sergachev ends up playing 40 games this year for the Lightning, then there's no draft picks exchanged whatsoever. So for the purposes of conversation, it's Drouin for Sergachev in a blockbuster one-for-one trade. The Habs then sign Jonathan Drouin to a six-year, $33 million contract, a $5.5 million average annual value on that. Ezzy, your thoughts on the trade? Drouin, now a member, French-Canadian, Jonathan Drouin from the Montreal area, now a member of the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, it's a very interesting trade, Drew, and we know that Jonathan Drouin had that trouble with the Tampa Bay Lightning earlier in his career, but when you look at this trade, and we obviously know that there were expansion draft implications, right, because mm-hmm. the Tampa Bay Lightning had to decide whether they were going to sign Jonathan Drouin long-term, knowing that they also have to sign Andre Palat and Tyler Johnson long-term, right? So, this trade, I don't think we're really going to know who wins this trade for years to come. And when you talk about Mikhail Sergachev, we had Warren Reichel on the show 3 or 4 weeks ago. He's coming off of a Memorial Cup win with the Windsor Spitfires. And this is a guy who many scouts believe can step right into the NHL. And when you're talking about Sergachev, he was drafted 9th overall last year, and he has that upside where he could be a top-pairing defenseman for many years to come for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So when you consider that Steve Yzerman was able to trade a player who he didn't intend on signing to a long-term contract for a potential future top-two defenseman, it's a pretty incredible trade. Now, what I also find interesting about this trade is that Jonathan Drouin is a natural winger, but he can play center. And we know that the Montreal Canadiens' weakness is up the middle, right? Yeah. So now there are implications for Alex Galchenyuk. What's his future with the Montreal Canadiens, right? I do believe Jonathan Drouin is a candidate to play center.
Really?
And when you talk about his skill set, this guy has 75, 85 point upside. He's only 22 years old. Mm-hmm. The best is yet to come. And so for the Montreal Canadiens, they get better offensively. We know that they are goal-starved, but now you've traded away two really good defensemen in the last 2 years, P.K. Subban and Mikhail Sergachev. So now I look at the Montreal Canadiens, and now they have to be in the market for a top-four defenseman. because they traded away P.K. Subban. Sure, they got Shea Weber. I realize that. But you've traded away your best D prospect, right? So I do think Mark Bergevin isn't finished.
I agree with you there, and you mentioned Alex Galchenyuk, and that's the rumors, is that Alex Galchenyuk is on the block where, in the hopes of getting a top four defenseman back in exchange for him, a guy who was a very high draft pick, third overall, if I'm not mistaken, and has never really, he hasn't ever blossomed to be a center. He was started on the wing, and the intention was always to transition him to the center, and he's never been able to fulfill that role for the Montreal Canadiens. So they are terribly thin up the middle, the Canadiens are, but the acquisition of Jonathan Drouin, I think, is almost too tantalizing to pass up. We've seen him just in flashes here in Winnipeg, because the Lightning only come through town once per year. And this is as dynamic a forward in the NHL. And he had some growing pains, but when he's on, this is as dynamic a forward in the NHL as there is, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, and we saw it, you know, I don't remember who he was doing it against, but that one play this season where he controlled the puck, it was very Datsukian the way he did that in the zone. And he's a very dynamic player, Drew, as you just touched on. And sometimes you can't afford not to take a player like that, especially if you're a Montreal team that, let's be realistic, this is a win-now team, right? You know, they're not let's win down the line. This is a team with older players that needs to really kind of do it at this moment. And their time is now. And you can't really say, well, you know, this is a player, Sergachev, that could be a top pairing, you know, defenseman in a year or two or three. That's too long for Montreal. They're too long in the tooth at this point in their most of the players that they have on that roster. So if you're Mark Bergevin, and even though you said at the trade deadline in March, that you have no intention of trading Sergachev, you know, the fact is you kind of had to when this opportunity presented itself. And again, it's nice for Montreal because they're getting a player from Quebec.
Uh-huh. You know, French-Canadian.
French-Canadian, you know. So, I mean, and I'm not to say that they wouldn't be happy with Sergachev, but I'm just saying from their perspective, a guy that speaks the language, a guy that's going to really be, I mean, there's going to be a lot more pressure on him. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this is a dream for Drouin, as he's talked about when he said about playing for, you know, pulling on that Habs jersey. And so I think it's a trade that makes sense for Montreal because of the position they're in right now.
Let me ask you this, as I should mention, of course, that this segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Let me ask you this, Ez. Did Steve Yzerman get enough for Jonathan Drouin?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think if Mikhail Sergachev turns out to be the top pairing defenseman that we expect him to be, then yes, he did. And, you know, again,
but the Lightning are a win-now team, too.
Yeah.
And so to Dave's point, I mean, yes,
I think Mikhail Sergachev does play more than 40 games next year, by the way.
You think he's a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning. So you think it ends up just being the straight one-for-one trade without any of the draft picks. So if he's able to step in, the Lightning are a win-now team, too. But if he ends up taking two, maybe even 3 years to get acclimatized to the NHL game, all of a sudden, a team, you know, the Lightning are in a win-now mode, too. Sure, it was a disappointing year. Sure, they missed the playoffs. But that's a team, as much as the Habs are, the Lightning are win-now, you know, where, you know, their window, certainly not closing by any stretch, but Steven Stamkos isn't getting any younger. He tends to be, you know, a little bit injury-prone. They're a team that really needs Sergachev to be NHL-ready, top-four quality next season.
Yeah, and you have to go back to next year and continuing into this year. A lot of scouts think he is going to be the best defenseman in that 2016 draft class, right? And that includes Olli Juolevi, who was taken before him.
Mm-hmm.
And then
that
includes Jacob Chychrun, who slipped to 16th to Arizona, right?
That's
so
right.
I do believe he is going to have an impact with Tampa Bay next year. I mean, regardless if that's, you know, 30 points, 40 points, he's going to be a regular everyday defenseman for the Tampa Bay Lightning. What I think, going back to, you know, what is really interesting about the implications for the Montreal Canadiens is that when you look at some of the teams that have defensemen to trade, so whether that's the Anaheim Ducks, whether that's the Minnesota Wild, whether that's the Colorado Avalanche, if I'm Mark Bergevin, I'm offering up Alex Galchenyuk to try to pry one of those defensemen out. So, you know, whether that is, you know, a guy like a Tyson Barrie, or if you're talking about a Jonas Brodin, I think that's exactly what the Montreal Canadiens need.
I agreed with you there. I mean, I think as much of this a big part of this trade, as much as it was the salary cap issues that Tampa Bay has, because they had to re-sign Drouin, and they have to re-sign Tyler Johnson, and I believe they have to also re-sign Andre Palat this offseason, it was also the expansion draft factored in. They were at risk of losing a good quality player, a guy like, you know, Vladislav Namestnikov, who's a young up-and-coming centerman on their team, or a guy even like Alex Killorn potentially. They were at risk of losing a real good quality forward to the Vegas Golden Knights. If
you
they
can't lose Jonathan Drouin for nothing. You just can't.
Well, they were going to have to protect him. Right. There was no doubt that they were going to protect Drouin, but then it was going to cost them Namestnikov, or it was going to cost them JT Brown, or it was going to cost them Alex Killorn.
Right.
They don't have to protect Sergachev because he's still young enough and he's exempt from the expansion draft, but I think that was a significant factor clearly in this move and why Steve Yzerman got a player who was expansion draft exempt as opposed to maybe a 21-year-old defenseman who would have had to be protected, a guy Trouba-esque, something like that. I think a guy like Sergachev held more appeal than Trouba, not saying specifically Jacob Trouba, because Tampa Bay couldn't afford to protect a defenseman that they acquired in this trade.
Yeah, and Tampa Bay has prospects in the system. You think about a guy like Braden Point, who played a little bit last year, Anthony Cirelli, who also played in the Memorial Cup. I mean, I think they can afford to lose Jonathan Drouin more than they can afford to lose a guy like Andre Palat, for example. Andre Palat's a great player. So, as you said, I mean, they had to decide who out of those three players were they going to re-sign. And it couldn't be all three of them, right? Because you have other players, obviously, under long-term contracts with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Obviously, Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov being the big ones, right? Yeah. So I think Steve Yzerman did very well here. I also think Mark Bergevin did really well here. As we talked about earlier, you get a player from Quebec, a guy with loads of skill. We haven't seen the best of Jonathan Drouin yet. You forget that he's 22 years old, right? So, I mean, I think he is a future top-line center for this team, or at the very least, he's going to be a winger. But I do think that they want him to be a center.
It'll be interesting if they can make that transition, because, of course, that's been the problem with Galchenyuk this entire time. For Jonathan Drouin's sake, I hope he hits the ground and he's immediately successful, because the pressure that will be on his shoulders as the French-Canadian savior playing in La Belle Provence is going to be so difficult for him if he gets off to a struggle. I hope for his sake he's able to step into the Habs lineup and not skip a beat whatsoever. When we come back, Craig Button joins us to talk about the NHL draft that takes place 6 days from today in Chicago. Craig Button up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can reach us via Twitter at Illegal Curve. We're, of course, available via text here in studio. Text to 129090. Standard message rates do apply, but send us your thoughts via text 129090. And of course, our website has got the latest Winnipeg Jets news. That's illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
By this time next week, the first round of the NHL draft will be in the books. Rounds 2 through 7 will be beginning mere minutes from now, next Saturday. To talk about the NHL draft, we have TSN's Director of Scouting, Craig Button. Craig, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. How are you today?
Very well, Craig. Always appreciate your time. We know it's approaching to be a very busy week for you on your calendar, so we're thrilled you're able to make time for us. Craig, we've got to start at the top of the draft, and you know we've had the Tyler Taylor draft a few years ago between Sagan and Hall. This is clearly going to be the Nolan versus Nico draft. In your final Craigslist, or your most recent Craigslist, you have Nico Hischier of the Halifax Mooseheads ahead of Nolan Patrick of the Brandon Wheat Kings. From your perspective, what is it that gives Nico the advantage over Nolan?
A little bit more dynamic skill, and I go back. I'm reminded of going back in the 1988 draft with Mike Modano and Trevor Linden, and you know Trevor was a really good player.
I think we may have just dropped. Craig. So Rory's going to get Craig back on the line, and we're going to hear the end of that answer. So we'll continue on with.
I always
Craig
wonder
Button.
If the person keeps talking, not realizing that they're no longer on the line.
Probably, you know, that's certainly happened before.
So unfortunately, Craig's just given a wonderful answer about the 1988 draft, and it's into the cosmos.
Into the cosmos, into the dead air society, if that sort of thing. Anyways, we'll get Craig Button back on the line momentarily. Should be a fun time in Chicago next week. It is going to. I mean, the Jets, of course, 13th overall. So it'll be interesting to see how that shapes out, and we'll talk about that. I think, Craig, are you back?
I am back.
There you go. You were talking about the 1988 draft with Mike Modano and Trevor Linden. I'll let you continue.
Yeah, I mean, Trevor was coming off of two Memorial Cup championships and was a real good player. But Mike Modano, the feeling was is that Mike had more dynamic skill. And I think when you look at Trevor became exactly what everybody thought he would be. He was a real fine player. Mike Modano was a Hall of Famer. And, you know, when you look at it from a dynamic skill point of view, that's how I look at it here. Now, I'm not putting Heischer into the Hall of Fame category, but that was the separator for me, just a little bit more dynamic skill with Heischer.
Craig, some scouts believe Finnish defenseman Miro Heiskanen is the best defenseman available in the draft, while others believe Cale Makar of the Brooks Bandits is the best defenseman available in the draft. Who has the higher upside, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, it depends how you want to define upside. Like, you know, Heiskanen is he's like a mistake-free defenseman. He's efficient. He's always in the right position in every area of the game. Igor Larionov told me, he said Heiskanen thinks the game like Lidstrom. Well, that's pretty high praise coming from a guy that played with Lidstrom, and I think Heiskanen has that. But I think when you look at Makar has a little bit more dynamic offensive ability. So I don't think it's a case of saying, you know, one guy has higher upside. I mean, when you think about points, think about Al MacInnis and Chris Pronger, who played together in St. Louis. They're both Hall of Fame players. Chris Pronger didn't put up the points like Al MacInnis, but Al MacInnis didn't do some things that Chris Pronger did. So I think they're both terrific defensemen, and I think they've clearly separated themselves from the other defensemen in this draft.
Craig, do you see any similarities between this year's draft class and the 2013 draft class?
In what way?
Just in terms of the, you know, it's not as heralded as, you know, some of the past drafts have been of late.
Well, I mean, you know, I think it's always important to say, I mean, you know, you look at the last two drafts, and really the last two drafts got defined by four players, selected one and two, McDavid and Eichel and Matthews and Laine. And those are unprecedented drafts. They just don't happen. And, you know, not only were they top-end players, but they come in make an immediate impact, not only for their teams, but in the league. So this, to me, is a normal draft. This is a draft like most other, like the vast majority of drafts. And, you know, if you want to say that you weren't sure, you know, what was going to happen after two in the last two drafts, well, all that happened this year is we're not sure what's happening at one, whereas the last 2 years we did. But I think there's real quality in this draft. I think there's some really top-end players. You're going to have to be a little bit more patient as a team because they're not ready-made like those four guys. But I don't think you can define drafts based on four guys picked at one and two because, you know, if that's how you evaluate a draft, well, then just trade in your chips and, you know, move on to another area.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Craig Button. Craig is, of course, TSN's Director of Scouting. We're discussing the upcoming NHL draft that takes place next Friday in Chicago. You can hear entire draft coverage here on the station starting next Friday night at 6 p.m. Craig, Czech center Martin Nekas has skyrocketed up the draft rankings as of late. A lot of scouts have him in the top 10, top 15. You have him, I believe, 7th overall in your latest Craigslist rankings. What do you like most about his game, and how much stock do you put into his performance at the Ivan Hlinka tournament?
Well, I mean, you weight everything accordingly. I don't put stock into the Ivan Hlinka more than another tournament. For me, you're trying to build the dossier on the player, and that's all I'm trying to do. So every opportunity you get to watch a player, you're just adding, you're trying to answer more questions. You're trying to get a better picture and a clearer picture of a player. And, you know, I've watched Martin Nekas for 2 years in all different situations, you know, with the U18 team, you know, club team. So you're looking at, to me, a really top-end player. Again, he fits to me that player that's going to need some time. But I think he's got dynamic skill. I think he's a big-time competitor. He's been the captain of the 1999 group in Czech Republic all the way through. So to me, when you get that type of a player with that type of high-end skill, and the game is played fast. So when you have a player that can play the game fast – I think that, you know, once he gets stronger and once he gets the maturity moving forward, I think he's got a chance to be real special. I really do.
Craig, you've got Swedish forward Elias Pettersson ranked ninth on your list. He's been compared to Nicholas Backstrom of the Washington Capitals, which is a pretty darn good comparison, if you ask me. Do you think he has number one NHL center upside?
Yep, I do. He's a playmaker. He's a creative genius with the puck. The ability to not only see the play, but to have the patience with the puck, then to be able to execute with the puck. I mean, that's exactly what Elias can do at all points in time.
Did we just lose Craig again?
We got Craig.
Hang on. There you go. Yeah, we got you. We can hear you.
You think about the All-Svenskan League. I mean, he's one of the top scorers as a draft-eligible player. That doesn't happen by accident. That is your end. The other thing about Elias is he attacks inside the dots. You're not going to be a real good offensive player if you don't attack inside the dots, because you're not going to score on goals from distance and from outside that area. And that's what Elias does. But you keep hearing it. Like, I think he's a top-end player. But he's going to need time to mature, because he's not physically mature yet. And, you know, when he's 20 or 21, he's going to be a lot further ahead. But I think he's got a chance to be a real, real good number one center.
Craig, Finnish left shot defenseman Juuso Välimäki of the Tri-City Americans is ranked 16th on your list, which means he could be an option for the Jets, who draft 13th overall. What kind of player would the Jets be getting if they drafted Välimäki?
Yeah, I've kind of defined him as a workhorse defenseman. You know, he plays all the situations in the game. He plays them with a lot of determination. He reminds me a lot of Mark Giordano, the way he plays. You know, he's competitive and in the offensive, the defensive zone, tacky.
I think
to me, he's a 20-minute a game player, and those types of guys that can gobble up minutes.
Craig, you know what? We're gonna give you a quick call back. I think your connection is fading in and out, so we're going to get our producer to give you a quick call back, and we'll continue the conversation. Hopefully, we got a better connection coming back up.
Craig's got to call his cell phone provider. What's going on here, Drew?
I don't know. Obviously, he's a little bit of a sketchy cell phone there, but we'll get Craig back on the line and hopefully get a better connection. We got a few more players we, of course, want to go through with Craig as we approach the NHL draft next Friday.
Yeah, Drew, Craig made a really good point. Dave asked him about the similarities between this year's draft and the 2013 draft, and when you think about it, even though this draft might not have a generational talent, you're talking about some really good players after number one and number two, and we've asked Craig about some of those players, so it doesn't necessarily mean that this isn't going to be a strong draft year just because you don't have Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews.
Craig, I think we got you back there. How are you again?
I'm good, yeah. Yeah, so I was just saying about Välimäki. He's a workhorse defenseman, and you know those guys, those types of players that can gobble up lots of minutes, they become real valuable. Coaches, you know, find a way to get them into their 20-plus minutes a game.
Craig Button, TSN's Director of Scouting, joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the upcoming NHL draft in Chicago. Craig, Ili Tolovainen, he plays for Sioux City of the United States Hockey League, had 30 goals this past season. Some scouts think he's the best pure goal scorer in the draft. How do you respond to that assessment of Tolovainen?
Well, I think it's accurate. And wherever he's been internationally, you know, under 17, under 18, he's always been at the top of the goal scoring leaderboard. So, you know, he's not just that he scores goals, he scores them in all different fashions. He can score off the rush. He can score. He's got a really good shot. He's got a really good release. He doesn't let goaltenders get a real good beat on it. And, you know, he's a player that's thinking. Like, when he sees a vulnerability, a lot of guys can shoot the puck and they can overpower you, but he's always looking for where the vulnerability is. And, you know, if you're a goaltender and he can open you up, bang, he hits that spot. So I also call him a real savvy goal scorer, and he'll attack the net too. Like, I mean, he's not a player that's just going to kind of post up and wait for the pass. He can do it in all manner of ways, and I think he's got the ability. He reminds me a little bit of Kucherov in Tampa Bay. That kind of shiftiness, and he, you know, he's making a move, and you think he might pass it, and bang, he shoots it. And, you know, and then you think that the next time down the ice, he might shoot it, but because he's such a threat to score, that the goalie gets set for the shot and he makes a great pass. And I think Tolvanen has that in his game.
Craig, we just have a couple more prospects that we want to ask you about. Defenseman Erik Brännström, who played for HV71 in the Swedish league this past year, he's projected to somewhere in the late first round. Some scouts have said that he's one of the most skilled defensemen in the draft. Are any teams going to be concerned about his size at all, do you think?
Well, here's what I would say. I would say if you're concerned about his size, don't draft him. But if you want a player that can skate and you want a player that can make plays with the puck, and you want a player that's a big-time competitor, then he's going to interest you immensely. You know, you watch the way the game is played, and to me, I don't scout with a tape measure. And I see lots of tall guys that can't even do any of the things Erik Brännström does. So, again, if you want to have a bias towards size or height or whatever you want to do, you know, you do it at your own peril. But this guy's a big-time competitor, and he's got big-time skill, and I think he's going to be a real good player. And for Winnipeg Jets fans, all you got to do is look at Tobias Enstrom, and that's a good player. And Erik Brännström has a lot of that in him.
Craig, Grant Mismatch of the U.S. National Team Development Program, who is committed to play for UND next season, is projected to go late in the late first round, possibly in the early part of the second round. How much did his play at the World Under-18 Championship raise his draft stock?
For me, I can't speak for anybody else. Stock for me doesn't go up and down. Again, I'm trying to answer questions and trying to get a full picture of a player. So, you know, and I've watched Grant play for 2.5 years. So I've had the opportunity to start from a long time back and then just continue to see how he handles new situations, how he handles the different challenges. So, and for me, I'm really satisfied that Grant Mismatch is a real good NHL player. And I think that this idea that, oh, you play good, therefore you're good. You play good at a tournament, therefore you're a good player. You better be careful of that. I've seen a lot of players come to a tournament and play good, and they were never good players. And conversely, I've seen some players, you know, maybe not have a good tournament, and they ended up being really good players. So you got to be really careful with that. And I think that's another place that teams make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Is the last viewing gets more weight than it should.
A little recency bias playing into the effect there. Craig, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, from your perspective, you know, we know the big names in the draft. Who's one player that you sort of are keeping your eye on as a guy who's maybe a little more unheralded, maybe not necessarily a first-round pick, maybe not necessarily even a second-round pick, that you think just has a lot of potential and that hasn't really been able to put it all together yet, but you like sort of the skill set that he brings to the table?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of players that I think are like that. You try to look at them. I mean, I go to my own list when I get to those places. But the guy that I would say is Alexei Lapanov, who a Russian. He was the captain of the other under-18 team. I think he's a terrific player. I think that he's got the high-end skill, the high-end competitiveness to be a really, really good player. And for me, he's in my top 25 players. I don't know if he'll go in the first round. My guess is that he won't, but I think he's going to be a real good player and somebody's going to be really, really happy. And in 5 years' time, we go, how did they get him in the second round? And just remember these words, because people didn't draft him because he didn't have a good tournament or he was rushing or he might not be the biggest guy. He's a good player.
Craig Button is TSN's Director of Scouting. The NHL Draft is next Friday with the first round and then rounds 2 through 7 in Chicago. Live coverage, of course, here on TSN 1290. Craig, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yes, thank you, guys.
Take care, Craig. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss the new head coaches in Buffalo and Florida. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Finding the right person to lead our players on the ice has always been the main priority. During his tenure with the Nashville Predators, he developed one of the top defensive groups in the National Hockey League. He's a very familiar face to Western New York, and he proudly wore our logo for 8 years. I would like to officially introduce the 18th head coach of the Buffalo Sabres, Phil Housley.
not only familiar to Western New York, familiar, of course, to those of us here in Winnipeg, Phil Housley, former Jets defenseman, is the new head coach of the Buffalo Sabres. No surprise with that hiring, as everyone was expecting that to be the case, just waiting for the Predators' Stanley Cup run to come to a conclusion. It did earlier this week, and as a result, Phil Housley introduced as the first or the newest head coach of the Buffalo Sabres. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Hiring of Phil Housley, something that gets two thumbs up from both of you gentlemen here in studio with me?
Well, I would give it four thumbs up if I had four thumbs.
You don't have four thumbs.
I absolutely love the hire. And that was Jason Botterill, obviously, that we heard speaking there. And you know, he was talking about the job that Phil Housley did in Nashville. We know Nashville has, at the very least, a top three defense in the league, if not the best defense in the league. I would argue that they have the best top four in the NHL, and Jason Botterill was talking about the job Phil Housley did with those defensemen, Roman Josi, Matthias Ekholm, to a lesser degree, P.K. Subban, and of course, Ryan Ellis. He's been there for all of those players' careers, P.K. Subban being the newest addition, obviously, but Phil Housley, I think, is a perfect fit for a variety of reasons. He's obviously got the history with the city of Buffalo, having played the majority of his career there before becoming a Winnipeg Jet in the Dale Hawerchuk trade, and then he also has the experience with Nashville. And when you're talking about the Buffalo Sabres guys, I mean, the Buffalo Sabres had a very quiet year, in my opinion. And, you know, maybe here in Winnipeg we followed the Buffalo Sabres for the Evander Kane angle and all of that, but the Buffalo Sabres were a very disappointing team this year. And when you talk about the Sabres, they still have a lot of work to do on that back end. And when you look at some of the defensemen that they have in the system, especially Rasmus Ristolainen, I mean, having a guy like Phil Housley there as a head coach, even though he's not necessarily going to work as much with Rasmus Ristolainen as he would as an assistant coach, but Phil Housley knows the game, and he did an excellent job in Nashville with Peter Laviolette. And I think for a young team like the Buffalo Sabres, you want a veteran coach, a coach with a lot of NHL experience. And Phil Housley has that NHL experience as an assistant coach. I'm not at all concerned that he hasn't been a head coach before. I mean, we've seen assistant coaches become head coaches before in the NHL and have a lot of success. So I think for the Buffalo Sabres, Jason Botterill's first hire as a GM of the Buffalo Sabres, I think he nailed it.
I think the biggest problem for Phil Housley is just going into that room and asserting his dominance immediately and getting those players kind of under his thumb and under his control, because the truth is right now, from what is kind of out there, is that the players seem to be running the show, and specifically their Jack Eichel, and whether he was, you know, the reason why the GM and the coach lost their job. I'm not saying that's 100% true, but I'm just saying that seems to be the sentiment in Western New York. So I think Phil Housley, you know, and let's be realistic, he's got a resume that he can point to and say, look, I've been in the show a long time. You know, I've got the experience both as a player and now as a coach, not obviously as a head coach, but still within the coaching ranks for a number of years. So he's got the experience, he's got the pedigree. And these players have to know, after making a change and still being, they're still paying Dan Bylsma, that they're not going to be making any moves. And remember, we saw this here in Winnipeg when Claude Noel was fired and, you know, they brought along Paul Maurice. The fact is that once the new coach comes in, the players know it's now on them. They no longer have that excuse. So the fact is that these players, this unit, which seems like a motley crew, if you will, is going to have to, you know, shape up or ship out. And I think some players will be shipped out by the new GM. But I think, you know, they know that it's on them. And yeah, Phil Housley's going to come in there. And like I said, he just has to kind of get – and I don't know – like, again, I'm not a head coach, so I don't know. But
he has to get the buy-in of the players.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, like I said, these players have no other options. There is no other choice. So you kind of have to buy into the philosophy. So I suspect – right now, especially, you're going to hear a lot of positives coming out of Buffalo simply because it makes the most sense for everybody to be on board, because the players know they're not getting another coach for a while, and the coach knows these are the players he has for right now.
The second head coach hired this week was in Florida, where they select former San Jose Sharks assistant coach Bob Bugner to be their new head coach.
The boogeyman.
The boogeyman. It's a bit of a off-the-radar pick, I would say, in that nobody was really, you know, you haven't heard Bob Bugner's name really talked about extensively as a future head coach in the last, you know, let's say 12 to 18 months. You know, the talk was always there about Housley, that he's almost ready to get a job. Bugner sort of apparently interviewed very well with the Florida Panthers, and as a result, Dale Tallon selects him to be the new head coach of the Panthers after a year of upheaval in Miami and South Florida.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, Bob Bugner wasn't necessarily the favorite, Drew, but you have heard his name, you know, over the previous couple of years, maybe not as the number one head coaching candidate out there, but, you know, you talk about the Windsor Spitfires earlier with Mikhail Sergachev, and Bob Bugner has obviously been part of that Windsor Spitfires organization, and the last few years he's been a head coach with the San Jose Sharks, working with their defenseman, right? So I really like this hire as well. And again, when you're talking about, you know, new head coaching hires, I mean, you're not necessarily going to have the proof of whether it was a good hire right away, right? So, I mean, obviously the Florida Panthers want to get back into the playoffs, and so do the Buffalo Sabres. So when you're talking about the Florida Panthers, I mean, Bob Bugner, you know, came out after he was hired and started talking about analytics and how, you know, he doesn't necessarily subscribe to them. And I would consider to Bob Bugner to be one of those more old school coaches. He was more of that kind of physical stay-at-home defenseman at the NHL level, right? But again, you're talking about a team that is a veteran team, but also is a team that has a lot of skilled players. And I think, you know, Bugner has that history with the San Jose Sharks. And again, it's so hard, you know, to say, is this a good hire or not a good hire? Well, how do you determine that? Do the Florida Panthers have to win the Stanley Cup for this to be a good hire? Well, I'm just saying, I mean, when you look at his track record with the Windsor Spitfires winning Memorial Cups, and you look at the San Jose Sharks going to the Stanley Cup Finals, his resume looks pretty good, doesn't it?
Yeah, he certainly has the pedigree. So, I mean, I don't think then that he has to win the Stanley Cup necessarily in his first year, but he needs to take the Panthers with the skill that they have. That should be a playoff team, in my estimation.
Oh, absolutely. It should have been a playoff team this year.
That's right. So he needs to take them back to the level that most people think that they deserve to be, which is a playoff team, and the San Jose Sharks the Florida Panthers are banking now on Bob Bugner to be the guy who gets them back to that level and, you know, and sort of continues the stability that Dale Tallon brings back in as the general manager of that team after what was that rocky year.
Yeah, and you talked about the preparation, and Dale Tallon said that one of the major reasons why they hired Bob Bugner is because he was more prepared than any of the other coaches that they hired, right? So I think another one of the reasons why Bob Bugner was hired is because of how well he's worked with the younger players at the OHL level and the NHL level, right? So when you're talking about the Florida Panthers, obviously Aaron Ekblad is one of the best young defensemen in the game. You've got a lot of other good players there as well. Nick Bjugstad, Jonathan Huberdeau, Alexander Barkov. I mean, this Florida Panthers team, even though they have the oldest player in the league on the roster, he hasn't re-signed yet, yeah, but we expect Jaromir Jagr to re-sign. This is still a younger team, and I think Bob Bugner's ability to work with those younger players at both levels is one of the major reasons why he was hired.
One quick Bombers note before we go to break, and Michael Tracos coming back on the other side of the break. Veteran receiver Kenny Stafford, he's one of the cuts the Bombers have made. Cutdown day, CFL cutdown day for the Bombers comes tonight. They have to make all their roster decisions by 10 p.m. tonight. Kenny Stafford, a veteran receiver, was brought in as a free agent. He is among the Bombers' final cuts for training camp, so you can file that in the back of your pocket to be used wherever you like to. Coming up next, Michael Tracos of Post Media joins us to talk about the world of the NHL in general. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text. You can send your message to 129090. Standard message rates do apply. It's how you reach us in studio, 129090 via text. You can send us your message. And, of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news. That's illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Michael Tracos. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media Network. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Pretty good, guys. Kind of preparing for the upcoming draft slash expansion draft slash awards and kind of the calm before the storm, although the way Montreal Canadiens are making trades here, there is no calm, I guess.
Let's start with that. We'll start with the big news of the week in terms of the deal. That's Jonathan Drouin going to Montreal in exchange for prospect defenseman Mikhail Sergachev. Do you think that, I mean, Drouin doesn't really solve all the problems facing Montreal. He's certainly an asset in that he's a dynamic young forward. Do you think it was just almost too good of an opportunity for Marc Bergevin to pass up acquiring Jonathan Drouin, a dynamic scorer, a French-Canadian dynamic scorer at that? Was the opportunity just too good for Bergevin to pass up?
I think so. And like you said, it doesn't maybe address all of Montreal's needs, unless Drouin can play center in the next couple of years. I still think you're looking for that number one pivot down the middle. But let's face it, part of the problem in Montreal wasn't just that they didn't have a center, it's that they lacked really some top-end scoring. Aside from Pacioretty and Radulov, they weren't getting a ton of offense. So you're bringing in a guy who only 22 years old, and it sounds like Drouin, it almost feels like Drouin's older just because he's been kind of in the public eye for so many years, but only 22 years old, had a breakout year last year, really his first full season, or I guess it was second full season in the NHL, but 21 goals, 53 points. I think you can reasonably expect him to better those numbers this year, especially if he's going to be in a prime role in Montreal. And yeah, I like it. I think it's just kind of another sign that Montreal is thinking now versus later. Like, obviously, with the Shea Weber trade last year, that was kind of a move to kind of say, okay, well, we've got a really good goaltender, and we really need a defenseman that can kind of help us push us over the edge right now. And for whatever reason, they didn't think P.K. Subban was going to do that. And now they give up a guy in Sergachev who, based on what I've seen at the World Juniors and guys I've talked to in junior hockey scouts, this guy's really projects to be either a top pairing or even a number one defenseman. So you're giving up a ton of, in terms of a prospect there. But Drouin helps you, I think, in the immediate future. And, you know, if he can score 25 to 30 goals and really help Montreal, especially on the power play, I think it could be a move that pays dividends at least next year in terms of the playoffs.
Mike, now that the Habs have traded for Jonathan Drouin, what does this mean for the future of Alex Galchenyuk in Montreal?
Yeah, I think that's the next kind of piece that a lot of us kind of expect to fall there. For whatever reason, Galchenyuk has shown kind of flashes of promise, but hasn't really kind of become that, what was it, number three overall pick. So I think I could see him getting shipped out right now. The only thing is, he's a center, and that's kind of a weak spot for you right now. So I don't know if there's maybe a Galchenyuk for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Montreal maybe sweetens the pie a little bit, or maybe you don't have to just based on how salary structures work out. But I expect there's probably another trade, maybe two more trades that Montreal is going to make between now and the start of the season in terms of just kind of addressing some of the fit on their roster.
Michael, switching over to Vegas, which is never a problem for me, how many teams do you expect will have deals in place with Vegas, and how steep a price do you think that they're going to be having to pay to make those deals?
That's a good question. I almost think, like, you could probably say maybe 20 teams. That's probably the over-under line right now, I think, in terms of having deals. And in terms of how steep of a price, I think it's going to depend on what team we're talking about, if it's Anaheim and if it's one of their defensemen, or if it's a piece that you don't want to lose. I think we're going to see maybe even a first-round pick get moved to solidify the fact that, like, you're protecting a player. So we'll see. I think the first move that gets publicly made, I think that's going to be the real kind of sign as to, okay, what the price structure looks like. But, yeah, basically, every team, I think, is going to be making some sort of deal with Vegas.
Michael Trakos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media Network. Michael, are you expecting a flurry of action today, sort of leading up to that 2 p.m. roster freeze, almost like a mini trade deadline as teams try to acquire assets rather than just lose players for nothing when they have to submit their expansion lists?
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I don't think it's quite the same as the trade deadline. I think the roster freeze probably affects some teams, but I don't know if it's quite the same. I know there's got to be one big trade today. I think a lot of people are kind of expecting that and hoping for it, but the same way, I don't know if we're going to see. I think a lot of people are still kind of feeling out what the temperature is and whether it's a Deion Phaneuf, or I know LA is kind of making some sort of movement here, whether it's a Gavrik kind of getting protected or moved or whatever, but I don't know. This is the first time for everyone. I don't know if there's really any kind of parameters where we're going, okay, based on last year, this got moved or whatever. This is all new territory. So whether GMs are kind of treating this like an actual trade deadline, it's hard to say. I think a lot of them are almost kind of nervous in the sense that they don't know exactly what moves to make or what moves they have to make.
You mentioned that it's new territory. Are you expecting Vegas to stockpile defensemen with the intention of trading those defensemen maybe after the expansion draft, leading up to the NHL draft, and trying to acquire some draft picks?
I think Vegas is going to be, when we're talking the actual draft, I think they're going to be almost like every other pick. It's going to be a Vegas pick. I think their prime objective is probably to stockpile a ton of picks, and whether it's defensemen that end up being the top commodity just because so many teams need help on the back end or not. But they're going to be the team that we're obviously going to be talking about at the draft. Not the expansion draft, I mean, but the actual real draft. I think they're going to be a second, third, fourth, fifth round. Like I said, I think they're going to be every other pick is going to be a Golden Knights pick. And it should be exciting. I'm really kind of curious. I don't know about you guys, but I'm curious to see just what this team looks like. I think there's a lot built up as to how competitive they may or may not be, and Marc-Andre Fleury possibly playing and goal for them. They could get some really big names just because they have to be at the salary cap floor. I'm really curious to see what this Golden Knights team looks like, and are they going to be better than some Canadian team? Are they going to be better than Vancouver Canucks out of the gate? Are they going to be better than Colorado Avalanche or an Arizona Coyotes? And if they are, good on them. I think we need more competitiveness in the NHL, especially on the bottom end. And hopefully they kind of push some of these teams that haven't got their act together in the last couple of years.
Now, Mike, the Toronto Maple Leafs have been surprisingly quiet since they were knocked out in the first round. They picked 17th overall next week, which is a little bit different than selecting first overall like they did last year. The last 3 years, they've selected William Nylander, Mitch Marner, and Auston Matthews. Do you see Toronto possibly trading up or maybe trading that pick to get a player?
I think if they trade up, it's only going to be a couple spots. I could see them even trading down the way that Mark Hunter likes to stockpile picks. He seems to think, and good on him, I think he thinks he's the smartest guy in the room a lot of times at the draft. So if he's got a guy that he thinks he can get in the 20s, or even in the second round, don't be surprised if the Leafs swap a first-round pick for maybe 2 second-round picks in order to do that. In terms of what they're looking at, I think they're still coveting skill. I think if they can get a skilled defenseman on the back end, I think that's their best approach, and I think that's the way they're probably looking at it just because they have so much skill up front, and not just in the Toronto Maple Leafs roster, but guys in that are coming up from either junior or the AHL, whether it's a Jeremy Bracco who won a Mem Cup this year with Windsor, or a guy like Kasperi Kapanen or Brendan Leipzig who tore it up in the AHL and with Kapanen got a sniff at the NHL level. So there's no shortage there. And I'm kind of curious when I'm looking at the draft, there's so many small skilled defensemen, almost like the Johnny Gaudreaus of defense. I expect those guys are going to be the talk of the draft after everything's said and done. A lot of guys who are sub-6 foot, almost in the Ryan Ellis type of mold or Jordan Subban type of mold, where they're giving up size, they're giving up strength, but they can move the puck better than anyone else, and they can kind of quarterback your power play and almost kind of like an Erik Karlsson. So there's a couple of interesting names. Obviously, Cale Makar who a lot of folks out west know a lot about. He's probably going to go in the top five. But down lower, there's a Swedish defenseman, Erik Brännström, who's 5'10", 170 pounds. People are already saying he's going to be like an Erik Karlsson type, but the knock on him, again, not a lot of size. So I'll be interested to see if the Leafs are eyeing him. That's a guy that could go in the 20s, maybe a little higher if a team really wants to take a chance. But those are the guys I'm kind of interested in seeing. Just kind of, is there a shift right now from the big defenseman to, like I said, the smaller guys that can quarterback offense and really move the puck?
Michael, June is such a whirlwind with the expansion draft this season and obviously the entry draft later in the month. But, you know, of course, there is that tournament that takes place that just ended that, you know, we saw play out for the last 9 months, which was, of course, the Stanley Cup Finals. What did you think of the finals overall between Pittsburgh and Nashville, and what was your assessment of what this will do for Sidney Crosby's legacy?
Yeah, I think if you didn't have Crosby and you didn't have the whole idea that, okay, he's moved himself into the top five of all time, I think when you look at it, Pittsburgh versus Nashville, the games weren't very compelling. I think aside from game six, there wasn't really a game that had you on your edge of your seat. Basically, you're either a blowout for one team or another, a goaltender didn't show up on one side, or you just had some really funky scores. So, but it was great in the sense that we really saw Sidney Crosby. It's funny, we're talking legacy. Like, he had anything to lose in that one. Like, he's already in the final. He's already won two gold medals, and yet this is a guy that still managed to better his resume. So it was exciting to kind of see that. I think a couple years ago, there was a lot of talk that Sidney Crosby was going to be possibly a one-and-done, and how disappointing it was going to be. Like, he was on this Pittsburgh team that could never really kind of get over the hump again after making the finals and back-to-back years. And now we're looking at him going, geez, is this guy going to three-peat? And when you look at Pittsburgh's roster for next season, they're not losing a whole lot of guys. If anything, they're young guys like Matt Murray and Jake Gensel. Should arguably get better. This is a team that's core is still going to be intact. All you're losing possibly is Marc-Andre Fleury and a couple of older pieces like a Chris Kunitz, or I think a Patrick Hornquist is also up. So they're in great shape, and it's really exciting to see when you're talking about the best player in the game really kind of showing it on the big stage.
Michael Trakos is the national hockey writer for Post Media Network. Michael, we'll see you in Chicago. Some deep dish pizza on you?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, we're looking forward to it, Michael. Thank you, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys.
When we come back, we look at the expansion draft from the perspective of the Central Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Minnesota is one team that it looks like very well can make a trade before the freeze at 2 p.m. Central tomorrow. The big reason for that is, especially on the blue line, they are going to lose a really quality defenseman. So I think the Wild have decided that you're going to maybe trade a Jonas Brodin in order to protect a Matt Dumba, or vice versa. There's a lot of steam right now with Jonas Brodin. They don't want to chance the fact that they potentially go into expansion, have Vegas take them and either take them for themselves or even flip them to another team, maybe one inside the division like Dallas, who has been coveting him.
That's our good friend Mike Russo appearing on NHL Network. Mike Russo, of course, covers the Wild for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, talking about the Wild and as their plans pertain to the upcoming NHL expansion draft. The Wild, certainly a team to watch today, as Mike mentions, likely, very likely, I would argue, to make a trade rather than losing one of their skilled defensemen for absolutely nothing. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to discuss the expansion draft from the Central Division perspective for the next few moments. Should mention, of course, that this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Check them out. Great place to have a breakfast if you're looking for a bite to eat early this morning or at any time during the day. So let's
Father's Day coming up tomorrow.
Exactly. Happy Father's Day to you too, Ez.
Well, I should be saying happy Father's Day to you. You're a father.
I know. That's what I was sort of implying there.
Unless you're trying to tell us something about Ezra.
Well, I don't know about that, but, you know, maybe. Soon enough, I suspect, but we'll take time. We'll announce that in due course here on the program. Let's talk about the Minnesota Wild. Are you expecting they're going to make a move today? As I just mentioned, they have, you know, they can only protect two of Dumba, Scandella, Brodin, Spurgeon. They got lots of defensemen they need to protect and only so many spots to do so.
Yeah, Minnesota's going 7-3-1, Drew.
Yeah.
I just don't see them protecting four defensemen. And we obviously know that Ryan Suter has the no-move clause. Marco Scandella is going to be protected. So the question is, who's the third defenseman, right? And if one of those defensemen who is exposed isn't traded, then you potentially lose him for nothing, right? What I also think is interesting is if Jason Zucker is exposed, because Jason Zucker is from Las Vegas.
Yes, he is.
Right? So it's possible that the Minnesota Wild expose a defenseman, but the Vegas Golden Knights take Jason Zucker. So I think that would be a nice story for him, you know, to play for his hometown team. But I kind of lean towards Matt Dumba a little bit, and I think Matt Dumba has improved.
Matt Dumba being exposed?
No, protected.
Being protected over Marco Scandella.
No, I think the defenseman Drew that they're going to protect.
Yeah.
And you know, I could be wrong. I've been wrong many times. The only certainty is Ryan Suter because he's got the no move clause and he's one of the best defensemen in the league.
Correct.
So it's going to be Ryan Suter. Yeah. I think it is going to be Marco Scandella. Pardon me. Jared Spurgeon, I'm forgetting about.
Yes.
So it's going to be Ryan Suter, Jared Spurgeon, and I imagine then it becomes between Scandella and Dumba. So I made a mistake there. So I do think it's going to be Ryan Suter, Jared Spurgeon, and Matt Dumba. But that means that Marco Scandella will be exposed along with Jonas Brodin. So then the question becomes, do you trade Scandella or Brodin unless you don't think that Vegas is going to take one of those guys, right? Mm-hmm. So they're going to lose a good player. I think Minnesota is one of those deep teams that stands to lose the most of any team in the league, really, because they're going to lose either a good forward or a good defenseman, right? So I think they're going to protect Eric Staal. The way Eric Staal played for the Minnesota Wild last year, they signed him to that 3-year contract last summer. I mean, how do you expose a guy like Eric Staal? I realize that he's a little bit older, but when you're a win-now team like the Minnesota Wild, Eric Staal is a big part of that, right? So I don't see Eric Staal being exposed. So to me, it's Jason Zucker there, and then it's most likely going to be Brodin or Scandella.
The other thing I was going to say about Minnesota that's interesting is they don't have a first or second round pick this year because they traded it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the Hanzel trade to Arizona. So they right now only have a third round pick in 2017. So I'm not saying that a third round pick can't do it, but you never know what McPhee's been getting in order to protect an asset that you can't.
Well, that might be why Minnesota is interested in making a trade today. You know, to trade a guy like Brodin to recoup an asset, to recoup a trade, to recoup a draft pick that they had traded away. So it makes the pain, let's say, of the failed Martin Hanzel trade a little more palatable if they're able to. But the Wild are one of the teams that are going to be most deeply impacted by the upcoming NHL expansion draft. There's no doubt about that. They're going to be impacted severely.
And Drew, I know you want to get to other teams in the Central Division, but whether it's Matthew Dumba, whether it's Marco Scandella or Jonas Brodin who gets left exposed, it's going to be two of those three defensemen. Going back to the trade market, I mean, there are going to be a lot of teams calling Chuck Fletcher about any one of those three defensemen because those are all defensemen who can play in your top four.
Yes, they're all skilled, highly skilled defensemen, probably one of the more palatable assets in this entire expansion draft. Moving to the Chicago Blackhawks, the expectation for the Blackhawks is that they have a deal already in place. We've heard about this last few weeks where the Blackhawks will leave Trevor Van Riemsdyk unexposed. They'll leave him unprotected, and the Golden Knights will take Van Riemsdyk, and they will also acquire Marcus Kruger via trade. So that's the expectation with the Chicago Blackhawks, is that they lose a good asset, a good young defenseman in Van Riemsdyk, but they get some salary cap relief in the Marcus Kruger trade. So that's sort of how everyone expects the Blackhawks expansion draft to play out. Of course, things can change on that front, but that would be the expectation.
Yeah, and they can afford to lose the big three defensemen that are going to get protected are Duncan Keith, Nicholas Dalmerson, and Brent Seabrook. Mm-hmm. And obviously, on forward, the only question is, are they going to protect a guy like Thomas Yurko, Richard Panik, Ryan Hartman? Schmaltz is exempt from being protected, but the big four, obviously, Taves, Kane, Hossa, Panarin. Or does Panarin have to be protected?
Panarin does not have to be protected.
Okay, that's right. I was thinking about that because he's only got 2 years of
Kane,
NHL
Taves,
experience.
Hossa, and Nisimov, they all have no move clauses.
Yeah, so I expect it to be probably Thomas Yurko and Ryan Hartman as the last two forwards there, but they're going to go 7-3-1. And again, if you lose a guy like Trevor Van Riemsdyk, I mean, he is a good young defenseman, but again, he's a guy that's mainly been a third-pairing guy.
Colorado Avalanche earlier this week bought out Francois Beauchemin. He had a no-move clause. They buy his contract out. That allows them to protect 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and the 1 goaltender. The question for the Avalanche is, who is that 1 goaltender? Is it the, you know, expensive yet talented Semyon Varlamov, a guy who has been, I would say, inconsistent at best? Or do they protect the young, up-and-coming goaltender, Calvin Pickard, of course, of Winnipeg here? So that's the question that the Avalanche have to answer. A lot of people expect it's going to be Varlamov, and Pickard will be left exposed, which leaves them vulnerable to Vegas taking Pickard.
I think you go with Calvin Pickard. You protect Calvin Pickard. He was excellent for Canada at the World Championships. They won the silver medal there, of course, losing to Sweden. But I think he's younger, and he's obviously got the more favorable cap hit. Semyon Varlamov's been very inconsistent, guys, over the years. And I realize he's a guy that has put up some really good numbers over the years in the NHL. But to me, you protect Pickard.
And the other thing also you have to take into account is that if they've already go for Marc-Andre Fleury, which is a big cap hit, do you really want a guy who's making almost $6 million as your, in theory, your backup goaltender?
Vegas, you're saying.
Vegas, if they take... Now, of course, we know that they could take him and flip him to a team that's in need of a goaltender. Mm-hmm. But again, as he talked about the inconsistency, you have a guy who, you know, played his mind out 2 years previous and then last year didn't do anything of the sort. So it could go either way. But, Pickard's been a nice piece. The only issue is whether, you know, Jeremy Smith or Joe Cannata could kind of come in, or do you have to bring then solve your own goaltending issue of getting in a new number one goaltender?
And, Dave, just because they expose Semyon Varlamov doesn't mean Vegas is going to select him, because Vegas is going to have a lot of great goalies to select from, right? Yeah. So you're talking about Antti Raanta, UC Saros, Philip Grubauer of the Washington Capitals. Mm-hmm. Vegas is going to take 6 goalies, right? So, I mean, Semyon Varlamov, I don't even know if he is one of those goalies.
It would be a risk-reward opportunity for the Avalanche there. One last team before we have to head to break, the Dallas Stars. A lot of talk that they're going to lose a guy like Cody Eakin. Young, of course, also a Manitoba-born player here. Only 26 years old. The talk that, you know, do you protect a guy like Eakin over a guy like Nichushkin? Do you protect Eakin over a guy like Brett Ritchie? A lot of moving parts there for the Dallas Stars, who are also at risk maybe of losing a guy like Jamie Oleksiak, a young defenseman, in that if they go 7-3-1, which is the expectation to protect Klingberg, Johns, and Lindell on the back end, Oleksiak, maybe Eakin, all decent young players available for the Golden Knights, supposedly.
Well, under that scenario, Drew, then Dan Hamhuis is left exposed.
Yeah, Dan Hamhuis is certainly at the wrong end of his career as well. I think the Stars would be willing to lose Hamhuis. I know it hurts them on their back end, but I think I'd rather lose a veteran guy like Hamhuis than a young guy like Eakin. Granted, he had a down year, a bit of an injury-plagued year, but it was only a couple seasons ago that Eakin looked like he was really morphing into a really talented player.
Oh, yeah, Cody Eakin has been a great third-line center for the Dallas Stars, and Cody Eakin obviously had a poor year this past year, but he had the injury problems. Mm-hmm. So I don't think if you're Jim Neal, you're looking at that last year as really indicative of the type of player that Cody Eakin is. So they obviously don't want to lose him. But as far as Jamie Oleksiak and Steven Johns, you're talking about guys that are in their mid-20s now. Oleksiak was drafted back in 2011, so maybe he's 24 years old
now.
He
is 24.
Same age as Scheifele. So for me, Oleksiak has kind of bounced around the American Hockey League and the NHL. He's never really proven himself after being selected in the first round. So for me, you can afford to lose a guy like Oleksiak or Steven Johns, and you can acquire a defenseman in free agency. I think that's what the Dallas Stars are either going to acquire a defenseman in free agency or possibly trade that third overall pick to get a defenseman.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mike Cranston. He's the Vegas Golden Knights correspondent for NHL.com. We talk about the upcoming expansion draft with Mike and all the scenarios floating in around the Vegas Golden Knights. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.